It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. All right, let's see if we can do 3 hours of radio. I say that because the wind is somewhat gale-ish outside, or as Brother Deacon Gerald used to note from time to time, it's a mite airish out there. Now, ordinarily, wind is just it's one of those things that happens on this little sodden ball of rock. A few skips and a hop and a jump out from a rather ordinary yellow star in the low rent district of a not particularly impressive galaxy. But then again, my internet is supplied by the recently bankrupt Frontier Communications. And when it thunders or it lightnings or when the wind blows, well, the quivering, shaking little chihuahua that is Frontier Internet runs under the bed and hides. Because, of course, it does. Now, that's not to say that it's going to happen, but there's a distinct possibility that it will happen. So, if this program just kind of disappears in medias res, you'll know that Frontier has once again run under the bed and hidden. Hi, I'm Bob. It is the 21st day of April 2020. It is the day before Agnes's birthday. No big celebrations, not this year. Mm-mm. Nowhere to go and celebrate. No. But her birthday falls on prayer meeting Wednesday this year. Maybe we'll get her a special prayer or something. But anyway, every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude because you're the ones who have made this program possible for these many years. And so thanks go out to our 21st of the month subscriber, Joan from Talibandiana. Thank you, Joan. I know Joan would love to have some company on the 21st of the month, so if anybody'd like to become a subscriber, we certainly do need them. And so if you want to be a subscriber, it's all over there at headon.live. If you want to help out and help keep this thing going month to month. We know we'll be here next month, God willing, and the virus don't rise. So we're there. That's where we are. And thanks, by the way, we have a couple of new Patreon subscribers. And I need to make sure that they get thanked. Thank you to Mark. Mark and Kathleen, thank you very kindly for becoming partial sponsors of the program. Thank you very much indeed. Oh, I'm glad. Jeremy in Vermont says, I'm still laughing. Just thought I'd let you know I'm still chuckling about Bob, stop telling us forest fires are funny. That was a good one. They all are. This program, I don't know about your mood, but it lifts my mood every evening because you guys have a wonderful sense of humor, and if nothing else, we will find something to chuckle about as we stumble through this plague. You know, it's not just a plague of a virus. It's a plague of ineptitude. I mean, it just is. So thanks, y'all, for the chuckle as well. By the way, if you'd like to be part of the Merry Wacky Zany real-time multimedia extravaganza that takes place during the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific, and all times in between and on either end, head over to headon.live and click on chat room. Anatole and House of Roberts and Otto and Squeaky are all waiting to join you there. I'm your moderator for the moment. Not a very good one, frankly. Because I'm bouncing around between tabs during the whole blessed program. And there, what a thing to have to see. I went over to the chat room, and there's a picture of Kaylee Maganini. Remember, I'm not using the disparaging term Karen anymore. All Karens are now Kaylees on this program, named in dishonor of Kaylee Maganini, who, curiously enough, in this case, it's Otto posting the visual. Quick picture of Kaylee Maganini. Quick test. This is a picture of A, the new White House press secretary, B, an inflatable love doll. Because I noticed that too. And in fact, apparently a lot of people have that. You could take the photograph and you could post it. You could post it as separated at birth. Kaylee Maganini and an inflatable sex doll. Now, I don't know if you bite Kaylee Maganini, does she squeal and fly out the window? I'm not certain at all. Or is it separated at birth or separated at manufacture? It's kind of hard to tell. Oh, I noticed it, Otto. I noticed it. That's what really makes it that way. Subject line, chuckling. Lee in New York says, hey, Bob, stop telling us to chuckle. You fuckers. Oh, God, it's going to be one of those nights, too. Yeah. Yeah, it is. Hey, thank you, Jeremy, for jumping in this evening. Thank you very kindly, my friend. That's very kind of you. And Brother Deacon Asa says, don't forget about Scott's tidy coffee-soaked tidy whiteys either, Jeremy. Is it the Atlantic time zone? Is that what's directly to the east of the Eastern Daylight Time Zone? Yeah, dinner's ruined in the Atlantic time zone. There's like the Windward Islands of the Caribbean are in that time zone, and maybe a little portion of Maine. We may have just taken up in far northeastern Canoodlia, dinner is toast. Not really. It's ruined. Albert says, I've not been able to listen to you through the headon.live website for about 10 days. I don't know why, but I listened to the podcast last night. I'm surprised you didn't mention Shel Silverstein's The Smoke Off as far as 420 music was concerned. Albert says, I bought that album just for that song. Back in high school, I memorized that album. When I was a little baby gospel DJ, I used to go through the cutout bin of the devil music that would still come in from back when it was a rock and roll station. And so we would still get promotional records. And there was promotional vinyl of The Smoke Off, and I was pretty sure that the good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual Republicans who ran that station wouldn't have any use for it. So I just took it with me, and I listened to it so many times, and I have a facility for memorizing things that I memorized The Smoke Off, and I can still do part of it. And that's why when our buddy Tom writes in from out in the broader General Bay area, I refer to him as Tom from sunny San Rafael, because in the in the opening of the smoke-off, Shel Silverstein declares, "Now, in the laid-back California town of sunny San Rafael lived a girl named Pearly Sweetcakes. You probably knew her well. She'd been stoned 15 of her 18 years, and her story was widely told how she could smoke 'em faster than any dude could roll. While off in New York City, on a Grove Street walk-up flat, there dwelt the Calistoga Kid, a beatnik from the past. He'd been rolling dope since time began, and he took a cultured toke and said, 'Kid, I can roll 'em faster than any chick can smoke.'" And that's how the smoke-off begins. Okay. Hey, not to be nosy or anything, but well, I'll have to email you that, won't I, Albert? Okay. We'll try to see if there's a fix on our end so that we can you can start getting the program live. In fact, let me just take a minute. Thank you very kindly to Anatole for jumping in. Thank you very kindly. That's most helpful. Well, I was thinking it's an hour later in the Atlantic time zone, so we really, really put the wood to dinner there. But Central time, no, it's just 11 minutes after 4, so it's not quite dinner time in the Central time zone, Steve, in New York. Oh, it is. Jesus Christ, it's good. Really? Really? Yeah, this is that night, isn't it? Jeremy in Vermont. "Hey, Bob, stop telling us when we eat dinner." Why don't we just do that for the rest of the evening? Bob, stop telling us. It certainly would beat the hell out of most of the news that I've got in the stack for this Trump-tanic Tuesday. "Full steam ahead, flank speed. Right full, left far rudder. We'll show that iceberg a thing. There's no iceberg. Pretty soon, there's like 15 icebergs, and pretty soon there'll be 5, and then there'll be no icebergs. And we've got the icebergs totally under control."
Ha.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting? Well, that cowbell has a funny ring, Otto, because it's a very, very old cowbell, and it's had a rather rough existence. I mean, it's old. Sparky sent it here. It belonged to his dad, and so it's really old, and I guess it's tin or something. It's a great cowbell, though. See, just for comparison's sake, that's what that cowbell sounds like. Here's the road cowbell. Doesn't have nearly the character. So over at Mediaite, and this is very interesting, a little hot mic comment. And it sort of fits in with something I was saying Friday. You know, how is it that Nitwit Nero has wallered all over all kinds of people who tested positive, and yet somehow he's okay? And I think they had him a little too hyped up on the happy meds yesterday. That business with Yamiche Alcindor.
Now, you're a great reporter. You really are.
Well, a New York Times photographer by the name of Doug Mills was joshing around with Fox News TV Radio Rwanda White House correspondent John Roberts, who was praised yesterday for
asking such a smart question. That's a really smart question. Where did you get it?
And, well, this happened.
What's up, Dave?
All right, man.
Where do you go, babe?
You can take out the mask, Doug. The case fatality rate's like 0.1 to 0.3, according to
USC. Is it really? That's reassuring.
USC.
Everybody here's been vaccinated anyway.
USC and LA County Public Health come out with a study. They found that there's...
You got that? Everybody here's been vaccinated anyway. Of course, you know, I think that he got something done to him round about November the 19th, right after the Defense Intelligence Agency had first begun warning of a disease burning through Hubei province where Wuhan is. That's, damned interesting, isn't it? Jesus, I can hear the wind rattling the eaves. Making the door squeak. Okay, let me, pass that along to Brother Deacon Asa. Hey, Brother Deacon Asa, Lee in New York says, I don't know why, but this evening I've had trouble cranking up the show on Google Chrome. Firefox is fine. Tech fun. Oh, and you'll recall that it was George Stephanopoulos who asked the question of Defense Secretary Mike Esper. And were you briefed on in late November about a disease in China? Oh, I don't remember that, George. Well, now George Stephanopoulos says he has tested positive, not for COVID-19, but for the antibodies. Because the New York Post went after him for taking a walk outside. It's amazing how these millionaires can get tested and antibody tested. And the rest of the country burns. It's almost enough to make a fella just a little bit paranoid. And working the other side of the street, Steve in New York says, please do tell us if there's a vaccine, Bob. I'm just terribly, terribly curious about all of that. Very much so. Sure seems odd, doesn't it? And because there are various conspiracy theories running rampant, and I'm trying not to have anything to do with them, but it's hard to just dismiss things out of hand as spurious bullshit when things keep happening to... make you think that it's not. And of course, last night came the news being disputed in some quarters that Kim Jong Bad Golf Pants of North Korea is gravely ill following some sort of cardiovascular procedure. One wonders what kind of cardiovascular procedures they're able to perform in North Korea. I know. Same. And congratulations. So is he or isn't he? And what kind of shit's going to hit the fan if he drops dead? And there'll be a power struggle and the blood will run in the streets as people try to, various individuals try to solidify control over the North Korean government. But then something that I have been thinking about for a few days. And again, I say these things with a great degree of caution because I never want to be perceived in the same even area code, barely even the same continent as Alex Jones. But if you were an authoritarian, repressive, dictatorial, tyrannical state, like, say, China, and if you had so many people, 1.3 billion or so, maybe more, and you knew that you couldn't feed them, would you get all broken up if you were able to bump off a bunch of your population with a disease? Now, this is another one of those situations where it's my hoppers versus lie hoppers, made it happen versus let it happen. But in the particular case of China, we have to bear in mind that it's not like this has never happened before. The Cultural Revolution and the Great Leap Forward claimed millions of lives. And that was on purpose. That was Mao Zedong and Zhou Enlai and that gang. And they killed the daylights out of their own people. So it is not outside the realm of possibility that China would do that to its own country. Now, if that makes me an asshole, I guess it's sort of a so be it. But it's hard not to think about things like that. And Kyle in Kentucky Stan, I think, gets where I'm coming from. He says, I hate to play conspiracy theorist too, but I wouldn't put it past our government to know there's a vaccine and only give it to rich people because we already know what they think of us. Well, but not just that, Kyle. What if it's a vaccine whose process is makes it very difficult to produce in large quantities? That's usually the way it is when you're ramping up a new drug. I've told the story before about how my uncle in the Second World War died from a completely curable, treatable wound because all the newfangled penicillin was with another part of the army. That's the story that's come down through the generations in my family. And so if you only had a little bit of it, who would you give it to? Well, you'd probably give it to the president, wouldn't you? You'd give it to the vice president. You'd probably give it to the secretaries of defense and state. And like the guy said in the White House press room, we've all been vaccinated anyway. Or we've all been vaccinated. Now, was that just smartassery? Probably. But it's not the kind of smartassery you'd like to have caught on an open mic, because I don't think this country is in a position to really appreciate such subtleties and such sorts of humor. You? Yeah, me neither. Had a note earlier from Kyle. Kyle kind of keeps us updated on what it's like to be, what it's like to have relatives who are deep in the Trump Kyle said, more maggot logic, courtesy of my father. People aren't really dying from COVID-19 because the tests are fake and they give out only false positives. And the CDC made them that way because Dr. Fauci is trying to be Joe Biden's vice presidential pick since he made Trump look bad. And Kyle asks, is this an actual thing among those in unreality in this country? I don't live there. I wouldn't know. Well, you heard it with your own ears, Kyle. And if not that, then there's plenty of other opportunities as well. And, of course, the markets went to hell today, again, some more. With the oil industry having a great big howling conniption and talking about their losses. Here's one of the funny things. This is the damnedest thing about the oil industry and hydrocarbon industries in general. They make shit tons of money, and yet somehow or another, they never have any on hand. And they need more welfare. The hydrocarbon companies are the biggest welfare queens in the world. And so there it was today. I got a nice note from Flavio a couple of minutes ago. And Flavio said, congratulations, you called it on the Save the Poor Oil Companies Fund. And I did. No magic involved. It's just a matter of being tuned into how sleazy these outfits are. And yeah. So this morning, Trump tweeted,
we will never let the great U.S. oil and gas industry down. I've instructed the Secretary of Energy and Secretary of the Treasury to formulate a plan which will make funds available so that those very important companies and jobs will be secured long into the future.
Just a brief reminder here that as long as there are oil companies, humanity really doesn't have much in the way of a, future. Other life on the planet, maybe. Us, not so much, because it's our consumption of hydrocarbons that are heating the planet up to levels that it hasn't been this warm since before the goddamn dinosaurs. But yeah, I subtweeted that thing and said, and there it is. I said on air yesterday evening, and I did, that there'd be a Save the Poor Oil Companies Welfare Fund. As I said on Twitter, it feels downright dirty being able to predict with such ease what these scumbags do. But there it is. Yeah. Thanks for noticing, Flavio. Thanks for noticing indeed, my friend. Trump and the Cure. Lee in New York writes, Trump discovered that the swabs look similar to Q-tips. I expect that the next miracle cure is called placebo. Dude, placebo? Any medicine needs real double-blind testing. I doubt that has happened. I expect these religion evangelicals believe that the blood of the lamb cures everything. Believing you are immune is not immunity. Yeah, but you're missing my point, Lee. He has wallered and smollocked and larped around with all kinds of people who were carrying the disease. And yet every day he's out there with nothing more than his usual Adderall sniffles. I can't explain it. Can you? Because it's the Chewbacca defense. Don't make no sense. Here's an email coming from our buddy Tosh. Going back to yesterday's reference to Hotel California, According to friends of mine who took it, Hotel California is related to LSD. They stuck it with their steely knives, but they still just can't kill the beast, in their view, refers to the reality that while tripping, food is not needed. I came out of high school having never tripped in hopes of getting an Air Force ROTC scholarship, and later was told that my usual days seemed like their acid trips. The protests are to counter, as to the protest conversation yesterday and sorting out that it's probably driven by the oil industry, the protests are to counter the idea that we the people can be better off working and sacrificing together, with the GOP abandoning any pretense of their usual fiscal control, even if they slipped most of our cash to our betters in the donor class. See who funded the groups that organized the Michigan rallies, the DeVos family. But remember, the DeVos family, are their eyeballs in oil, too. Are afraid the knuckle-draggers will finally figure out the top side of the Laffer curve, where taxes are significantly higher, is better for most of us. I have what I think is a better term for the solidly left progressive policies of someone like Bernie than democratic socialism. I've long called our favored policies constrained capitalism, but that first word sells poorly, so I'm thinking about democratic capitalism. Borrowing a term from Laura Ashcraft, New York 12 House candidate, it's a set of policies focused on trickle-up economy, where goodies go to the hardworking folks and the froth rises to the corporate offices. We have decades of experience in the lower branch, and continuing down the lower branch, we get to Kansas, and then we get to serious economic dehydration. And absolutely, you absolutely are the horns resident rocket scientist, Tosh. You never haven't been. And there's some information there. I don't know if he wants out in the public. Does fascinating work. As to the oil glut, I hope the oil companies choke on their inventory. They can't give it away, says Flavio. Well, that's part of why we're hearing what we're hearing, like I said yesterday. We got to get people out there polluting again. Damn. What's poor little oil company to do? But they'll be stimulated. And we've got another stimulus bill. This one's $500 billion, apparently. Gives away a whole bunch of stuff that Republicans wanted. Not so much for the Democrats. I haven't seen enough analysis yet to know if there's anything for the Postal Service in there, but I'm guessing not. Man, I tell you what, the maggots are going to fire up the Lee Greenwood and put on their little red hats, and they're going to be so happy when it costs them $15.50 to mail in, because you know they don't bank online, to mail in their power bill and their phone bill and their homeowner's premium and their car insurance and their car payment and their house payment. $15.50 for every one of them. They are just going to feel an upswell of patriotic fervor, don't you think? Yeah, me neither. Now, of course, if you want to talk about a place that worries a lot about all, and it's best, it's barely even a syllable when properly pronounced in Southernese, all. It's more of a grunt, all. O-I-L, all. But Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick of Texas went on Tucker Carlson's little Nazi fest and talked about how, well, what your patriotic duty is and what my patriotic duty is, and apparently, well, doesn't have a very happy ending.
See a lot of people out of work, and you're going to see the economy crush. Do you think you've been vindicated?
I'm sorry that I'm vindicated. I wish it hadn't happened, Tucker, but I'm a small business guy, and I've been around the block long enough to see what was going to happen. When you start shutting down society and people start losing their paychecks and businesses can't open and governments aren't getting revenues and go on and on and on and on. So I'm sorry to say that I was right on this, and I'm thankful that we are now Tucker, finally beginning to open up Texas and other states because it's been long overdue. You know, they told us, Tucker.
Opening up Texas and other states. Yeah, opening up Texas and other states to the coronavirus, to COVID-19. Because this is what happens when the maggot brain gets in charge of things. They think that because we've had fewer than expected deaths, that somehow that has to do with the fact that we were all being lied to and it wasn't as bad as we thought. When in fact, any reduction in the number of expected mortality is because we took the action that we did. Jesus Christ, these idiots. Now, in the meantime, you've got the director of the CDC, Robert Redfield, and the Washington Post interviewed him, and he said the following. There's a possibility that the assault of the virus on our nation next winter will actually be even more difficult than the one we just went through, as if it was in the past tense, which it isn't. And when I've said this to others, they kind of put their head back and they don't understand what I mean. Well, no. It's not that they don't. No, it's you need a better imagery, Dr. Redfield. They look at you like a cow looking at a new gate. Just, They're baffled. Because all a maggot can ever think about, all a Republican can ever think about is money. And they don't realize that the economy isn't some thing sitting in a castle somewhere or a god in some Egyptian temple that has to be occasionally sacrificed to with human flesh and blood in order to keep it going. No. An economy is artifactual. It's something humans make. There's no economy without human beings. It's the tree that falls in the forest and there's no one to hear it. And so it doesn't make a sound. If one is of an anthropocentric mindset. But not to them. It's sacred. It's holy. It is to be worshipped. Like a fetish object. And so Dr. Redfield seems to be saying that not only are we not done, there's an even bigger shit show coming. And look at how they respond. Back to the asshole Lieutenant Governor of Texas.
To follow the science. Well, what science? I mean, at the end of January, Dr. Fauci, who I have...
there it is. They say follow the science. Well, what science? You know, the same science that you neglect and deny in regard to the climate. The same science that you asshole Texan, and your fellow travelers... despise every time it's time to revise the textbooks and you try to get the Genesis creation included in biology books and science books instead of putting it over in fantasy fiction and literature. That's science.
You know, they told us, Tucker, to follow the science. Well, what science? I mean, at the end of January, Dr. Fauci, who I have great respect for, said this wasn't a big issue. 3 weeks later, we were going to lose 2 million people. Another few weeks later, it was 1 to 200,000. Now it's under 60,000. And we've had the wrong numbers.
Imagine being so morally bankrupt so ethically bereft that you can think that 60,000 dead Americans in 2 months' time is no big deal. Not quite 3,000 people died on September 11th, 2001, and these same sorts of people were jumping around, hopping up and down, veins in their teeth and ready to go and slaughter millions of brown people for something that they had nothing to do with, which they then did. But this, my God, you know, I mean, we made some money on the Iraq war there, Bob. War's good business.
The wrong science. And I don't blame them, but let's face reality of where we are. In Texas, we have 29 million people. We've lost 495, and every life is valuable. But 500 people out of 29 million, and we're locked down, and we're crushing the average worker. We're crushing small business. We're crushing the markets. We're crushing this country. And what I said when I was with you that night, there are more important things than living.
Ah! There are more important things than living. Now, what he means by that, the Lieutenant Governor of Texas, is that there are more important things than us living. There are more important things than you or me living. There are more important things than 7-year-olds getting to be 8-year-olds. And those more important things have to do with Dan Patrick, Lieutenant Governor of Texas, and his minions and cronies. Continuing to ingather more wealth. Yeah. There's more important things than living. Like oil companies. And gas companies. And coal companies. They're a lot more important than you living. Get out there in the street and smolik and larp and tossle each other's hair and talk about freedom until you can't breathe anymore. These maggots are menaces to humanity. They are real-time living existential threats to the rest of us. And our only defense is to stay home and stay safe. Hoo-wee! That governor of Georgia, Brian Kemp, he opening up the tattoo parlors. Yeah! Boy! Yeah, if I lived in Georgia, I'd be right there waiting. Got to run right in there and you know, maybe on a bicep or something, get me a coronavirus tattooed on. Maybe that'd keep it at bay. It'd be kind of like a smallpox vaccination scar. There are more important things than living. Hopefully someone will remind him of that the next time he decides to unburden himself and burble on and on and on about the precious fetuses. Oh. A deity with a handful of lightning bolts would be handy. Come in real handy. And that's how I know it ain't real. God almighty. Let's see here. Hung Like Jesus says, Have you heard the rumor that the COVID-19 affects one's mental capacity? Yes, I have heard that. And there was a new one today, COVID toe. Apparently, blue spots, painful blue spots, appear on one's feet and toes. And, of course, mental. I think it was Chris Cuomo, CNN, who said that that it was messing with his head. Hang on. That was the boss. Have to take calls from the boss. But Chris Cuomo said that, yeah, it was messing with his head, his thought processes. And then there's, quarantine and isolation. Well, we learned a long time ago that solitary is not good for human beings in prison situations. Not by a long shot. And that's taking a toll, too. God, I've gotten to the point where I hate going to sleep just because of the damn dreams. It's like it might as well stay up all night. Because they're in full, CinemaScope Technicolor. And you wake up and you're just worn out. It's not that they're necessarily scary dreams. You just have to sit there and watch them all night long. Jesus. So, yeah, I'm familiar, hung like Jesus. I am. Oh, great. Gunplay. Beautiful. Maybe it's a backfire if I'm lucky. One of the members, Elbert in Rhode Island writes, one of the members of Steely Dan was having marital problems. His wife used to listen to Eagles music very loudly to antagonize her husband. In the TV show Z Nation, the zombie outbreak was caused by a germ expert. He was working for a group of billionaires. They wanted to wipe out those people. Then they could take over the world. I listened to NPR before I listened to you, Albert continues. An NRA exec board meeting was tape-recorded somehow. Their CEO told the board that they were being sued for various reasons. He expected their legal fees to cost them around $100 billion. Good. I can't imagine how a world without an NRA in it would be a worse world than the one with it in existence. So, Jesus. What a mess it all is, huh? Well, it might be the interweb tubes. Darlene says, terrible interference with your program. Something's cutting in and interrupting. You're breaking up and dropping off for several seconds. The interference has a sharp tone to it, and it's just a split second just about every time you talk. Check, 1, 2. Well, I'm not overdriving the mic. We're not clipping at all. God only knows. I'll check. I'll have to ask. I'll see if the podcast was that way too. Thanks for letting me know, Darlene. But Darlene said Kyle has a point. I'm nagged by the observation that Trump, Pence, Burks, Fauci, William P. Barr, the P stands for Pelham, I'm guessing from one of his Scottish forebears, all seem to be fine and unworried. They do not stand 6 feet apart on the dais every day. Here in Connecticut and next door in New York, the governors and their respective entourages are all sitting or standing 6 feet apart. All the reporters, etc., are doing the same, plus wearing masks. And it's the same with West Virginia. Make West Virginia Great Big Old Governor Jim Justice has his thing. The sign language interpreter is 6 feet from him, and there's another expert, and all the experts are spread out 6 feet apart. And I don't think they're even letting reporters in. Everybody has to call in their questions. I know, Darlene says, I'm digressing, but this is just too much fun to play with the goddess of irony a bit, and respectfully so, but Pelham also means a horse's bit with a bar, emphasis added. Bar, and double rings commonly used in riding bridles and designed to combine the function of curb and snaffle, per Merriam-Webster Online. It's also the name of a city in Alabama, and more disturbingly, there was a Confederate American Civil War officer named John Pelham, of which the city was eponymously named. And then there's, I'll add one more to that, Darlene. Isn't there a movie of some fame, maybe it had Al Pacino in it, called The Taking of Pelham 123? Oh, the things we find on this program. I'll bet this is the only radio program in the world today that checked in on the etymology of the name Pelham. So, kudos to you, Darlene. Okay, might be internet on your end, Darlene, because Jeremy checked in and Robert checked in from Australia and says loud and clear in both instances. Robert says, there are more important things than living. Can you enjoy them when you're dead? Well, that's the tell in that quote, Robert. There's an elided word or words in there. There are more important things than y'all living. See how much? Yeah, it makes a lot more sense then, doesn't it? Good. And Jeremy says no overmodulation either. Huh. Jude in the Great Northwest sends along a story from Alternet. The White House sidelines the Surgeon General Adams, after he spoke about COVID-19's devastating impact on communities of color. Well, of course, because this is a white supremacist presidency. Any argument to the contrary is bilge. Randy in PA notes, we were all taught to worship heroes in grade school. It was a lie because almost all of our heroes have feet of clay, because we all have feet of clay in one aspect or another. When you point this out to the conservatives, instead of learning the lesson, they freak out and become livid because the conservatives are sycophants. I'll add lick spittles. That's such a descriptive term and so accurate. I mean, yeah, okay, we'll go ahead and take a run at dinner in the Eastern time zone. It's so descriptive because, you know, you can imagine Corona Caligula just, you know, getting a real good lung oyster up and right on the ground and watching Trump or watching Pence and Barr and Kaylee Maganini and Kellyanne Skeletor, all running headlong to get at it and LARP it up off the surface. Of course, the other trouble with heroes is that we don't understand the original meaning of the word as it developed in ancient Greek culture. Because heroes were scary people. They did amazing things, and then they also tended to do awful things. Yeah, Hercules being coming to mind in particular. Medea. Yeah. As for the $500 billion giveaway today, it's being reported, Democrats cave, nothing for states or cities, nothing for election protection or the post office, no oversight, no limits on fossil fuel bailouts, no food stamps. They got some testing. Somehow that's a GOP concession. But no contact tracing. Oh, we can't have contact tracing because, well, that would mean that Bill Gates was going to know where we all are all the time, because Bill Gates wants to know that, I guess. And, of course, from Jeremy in Vermont, Bob, stop telling us how Trump spits correctly. Yeah, why not? Lee positing a theory as to Trump's immunity to the virus. Lee says maybe it can't live off fast food. Lee adds that because the taking of Pelham 123 is about the New York City subway, I'll add this. Pelham is a neighborhood in the Bronx. The more you know. Brother Deacon Asa says audio is 5x5 to him, too, so might want to reboot, Darlene. So much madness. So much fear. So much worry. And even though the bill has a little bit of it does have a little bit of testing in it, since there's no contact tracing, we'll never really be sure when it's safe to go back out. Which is by design, because the one thing that the Republicans are scared more of than the virus itself, and they know how serious it is, but what scares them more than anything else is the prospect that the people, we the people, might find out how brutally they've mismanaged it, and how many and how many gigagallons of blood are on their hands. Walter Matthau was in the taking of Pelham 123. Not Al Pacino? Okay. I magic that way. Darlene in Connecticut says, thanks all. Whatever the interference was, it ceased right after I emailed Bob about it. He can command the electrons without using the weirding module. For he is the Kwisatz Derp Rock. So we've reached the top of the hour, and it is Tuesday, so that means we've got the Green News Report coming up. I find it, especially right now, to be a good counterpart to all the coronavirus news, because Brad and Desi are keeping, they're keeping their eye on the ball. And that means that they're paying attention to issues relating to climate and the like. And that's beneficial now. It's important. So we'll take a minute or six and check in with them and see how it all plays out. Now, don't y'all go anywhere. I'm not.
It's Tuesday, April 21, 2020.
The most extraordinary development that took place today when the U.S. main blend, West Texas Intermediate, fell more than 306%. You see it on the screen. It is negative $37.63 a barrel.
Oil prices plunge into historic negative territory. Trump EPA rolls back rules on toxic mercury pollution. Plus,
what we cannot afford to do is to jump out of the frying pan of COVID and then into the raging fire of climate change.
Earth Day and climate action somehow during a global pandemic.
All of those somehows and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Oil prices have turned negative.
You can't pay people to take that crap. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, you may have to help me with this one. Oil prices are now negative?
Yeah, it's a remarkable thing, and it's also a remarkable confluence of historical events. Monday was the 10th anniversary of the deadly rig explosion that started the BP oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico, the biggest oil spill in U.S. history. Also on Monday, one particular benchmark of U.S. crude oil prices crashed to its lowest level since oil futures began trading in 1983, plunging into negative prices, literally almost negative $40 a barrel. Now, it's partly a quirk of the market. This was for future oil deliveries in May, meaning that producers are paying pipeline and storage companies to take it off their hands, which market traders deemed essentially worthless.
Okay, let me stop you for a second. They will give you money if you take their oil.
Correct. It's happening because the coronavirus shutdowns have decimated demand for oil, on top of a little price war between Saudi Arabia and Russia, and a pre-existing supply glut. Oil storage in the United States is now near capacity. It is partly U.S. drillers' own fault. They knew that there was an oversupply, but they refused to restrain themselves.
Why don't they just stop drilling?
They won't, according to Goldman Sachs oil analyst Andrew Tilton on CNBC.
Producers don't want to shut in wells and do things that'll cost them in the longer term. Everyone is hoping that someone else will cut supply and cut production so they don't have to.
So they just won't stop drilling because it costs them too much money to stop drilling. So they continue drilling and then they pay people to take the oil off their hands.
Exactly.
Okay, that's a fantastic business model.
For the record, the price of a barrel of sunshine has not changed, nor has the price of a barrel of wind energy. Meanwhile, the Trump Environmental Protection Agency last week announced it is gutting an Obama-era regulation that required coal-fired power plants to reduce emissions of toxic mercury, which causes serious ailments and brain damage in children. But worse, the new rule also effectively dismantles the legal basis underpinning all pollution regulations. The previous mercury and air toxic standard dramatically cut toxic mercury emissions and other pollutants. EPA's own scientists say this rollback will increase premature deaths from air pollution, and utility companies don't even want the rollback because they've already complied with it. But the new rule is really about handcuffing future administrations from crafting new pollution regulations by fundamentally altering how the EPA calculates its cost-benefit analyses. It prevents the agency from considering co-benefits that arise from reducing other pollutants at the same time as mercury. That's to make it appear that the costs are too high and the benefits to the public too low to make it worthwhile for polluters to not poison Americans.
So if it's going to cost an industry $10 billion to clean itself up, however, it will save the American people $30 billion in health costs. The administration is saying, nope, you can't look at that $30 billion in health costs. You can only look at that $10 billion that you're costing the industry.
No benefits, all costs.
Oil prices are negative. The administration is tossing out regulations that their own scientists say will keep people alive. And you can't even count the money saved in lives not lost when determining regulations. This world is upside down.
Finally, Wednesday, April 22nd is the 50th anniversary of Earth Day. This year, because of the global pandemic, all of the planned demonstrations, celebrations, concerts, and festivals are going digital. But former UN climate chief Cristiana Figueres notes that the coronavirus also provides a rare window of opportunity for governments to restructure their economic recovery policies to incorporate climate action, resilience, and justice.
The opportunity and the responsibility here is to figure out how do we design and implement the recovery packages so that they definitely put people back to work and they reignite the economy, but we do so in a clean, sustainable, long-term way.
Dennis Hayes, one of the first Earth Day organizers, said in a Seattle Times op-ed, quote, COVID-19 robbed us of Earth Day this year, so let's make Election Day Earth Day.
Why not? It's a world turned upside down at this point. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
And so we come to the second hour of the program, and I'm hoping here in a minute or two we'll have a little audio treat, something that I was sort of planning on and trying to make happen, and it's gonna. So, in particular, I've been watching the madness coming out of the Deep South. And probably one of the scariest places to be in America right now is Georgia. And so I thought I'd reach out to an expert on bad governance in Georgia. And so, Mike Malloy, thanks for joining me this evening.
Hey, my pleasure. One of the scariest places to be in Georgia, though, is in my basement.
Is it getting a little weird, Mike?
Oh, man, we left weird behind so long ago. I mean, we're into psychosis now. Weird. Jesus. You know, we have the dumbest governor here in the history of Georgia, possibly in the history of the United States. I thought our last two were really batting in negative numbers. But this Brian Kemp, this son of a bitch is crazy. I mean, and that's a compliment. I shouldn't call him crazy. He's just an ignorant man, just one of the most ignorant people I have ever heard. Right up there in Trump country, you know what I'm saying?
Well, it's that combination of ignorant and crooked that really, makes for the toxic stew.
Yeah, that's true. You know, I'll tell you, the truth is, Bob, as you know, I've been in the southern part of the United States for most of my life at this point now. And I am so sick of hearing these white male southern politicians. I don't know whether to scream or go blind. I mean, they're driving me crazy. At first it was funny, and then it was kind of pathetic, but now it's tragic. You know what I'm saying?
Oh yeah. And it's the retrograde motion too, because you know I'm southern based as well. It's the retrograde motion. There was a time when you know there was a new South and things were going to change and no more.
Yeah,
that's all out the window.
I remember that. I remember the new South. That was one of the reasons I decided to be here permanently back in the early 70s, I think 70. Well, I first got here in 1970 and left, came back in 74. But that was the reason I came back. Atlanta had as its mayor Maynard Jackson, first black mayor in Atlanta, who was just an absolute. He was the consummate politician, but in a good sense, in a very good sense. And not only was there good political leadership in the city then, the General Assembly was controlled by Democrats. Now, some of them were moss-backed Democrats. Some of them were Democrats in name only. But it gradually changed until we had a Democratic governance in the state of Georgia that made sense, that really made sense. And then it all went to hell, I guess, around the Reagan-Bush years.
Yeah, that's when you get the I didn't leave the Democrat Party. The Democrat Party left me. That's right. When all that crap starts.
Yeah, well, Zell Miller was the biggest disappointment when he ran for governor, after being lieutenant governor for about three or four terms. I wrote a piece for him in the Atlanta Gazette, a piece about him, And he wrote me the nicest letter and said that was one of the nicest things ever written about me. And I tried to write it in kind of Hunter Thompson style. I don't know if it came off or not. But this is back when Zell was putting together a Democratic coalition that really made sense. And then something happened. Zell had, I don't know, drank too much moonshine one night or something, but his mind snapped. And all of a sudden he became a George W. Bush supporter. And that's about the time that I just went, you know, it's gone. The New South is gone.
So in the Georgia of the here and now, the shutdown really sort of similar to South Carolina never really got off the ground. It's kind of hard to think of something mm-hmm. as a shutdown, for instance, when the strip joints are still open. But
yeah, that's true.
The greater Atlanta area is blue-ish.
Right.
Are people taking the shutdown more seriously, say, in the greater Atlanta area than they are down in, like, you know, busted knuckle Georgia?
I think so. And I think one of the reasons for it is it suddenly dawned on our dusky brethren that that people of color who make up a huge proportion of the population of the city of Atlanta, if not the majority. Now, we're we're 5.5 million people here, but the city of Atlanta is about 500,000. And probably, I don't know the latest numbers, maybe 55% is African-American. And it's finally, and I don't mean that disparagingly, but it's finally occurred to a lot of black folk that this is not a white person's disease. This is going to strike human beings that make any difference which race or religion is. And as a result, the effort to keep folks aware here in Atlanta that we're dealing with some monster, it has sunk in to the white rednecks, middle-class blacks and whites. It's even sunk into some of Atlanta's elite. But, yeah, it's been pretty much acknowledged that this is real and that people have got to protect themselves, and that means put distance between you and the next person. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, I do. I do indeed. And so, I mean, how's it been there in the Malloy basement? I mean, are you coping? I mean, everybody wants to know how Molly is. And
what's she doing? Great. We left Atlanta on March 26th. Hold on a minute. Like you, I suffer from this damn pollen.
So we're buried in it. It hasn't gotten warm here yet, but you know, my white car has turned green. It's all over the place. But
so if I have to pause and cough,
good. Don't worry. As long as you're hale and healthy, that's what matters. So
there you go.
We left here
on the 20th.
Go ahead.
We left here on the 26th. And headed south to a place that we've gone to a lot, Cape San Blas, Florida. It's in the Florida Panhandle. And it's a cape that runs off the mainland. It's pretty isolated. There are vacation homes down there, but it's pretty isolated. And we rented a place for a week. And then we were going to come back. But the guy who owned the house, who lives in Chicago, he used to listen to me on WLS, apparently, and he said, I don't have anybody booked in there for the whole month of April. So if you want to pay me for another week, you can have the whole month. Well, hell yes. You know. So we did that. And then the next day after we got there, they issued this stay out of Florida ruling, which made us stand out with our Georgia plates pretty vividly. But Molly and I stayed there for just shy of 3 weeks, and then that was it. I mean, you can only take so much beach, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And the weather was kind of crappy down there anyway. So anyway, Molly and I came home. Kathy wanted to stay. So we came back here, and in that process, we've really struggled to keep the program, the podcast, on the air. I finally bought a piece of equipment like you have so that I can now do the podcast from Antarctica if I want to go there. I guess they have power sources there.
And no coronavirus.
That's what we've been dealing with. And no coronavirus. But we've been dealing with, you know, just what everybody else has been dealing with, you know, trying to figure out how to live your life and do the things that you normally do in under the new world order. So I think we finally got it down now. A lot of our podcast subscribers, I think, were getting a little disappointed, but I think we've got it worked out now.
Well, good. And, you know, any help I can be, I'm more than willing to. Let me ask you this, though. I mean, do you expect, as Georgia, as Brian Kemp goes nuts, do you expect people to just run out and frolic in the streets now? I mean, I'm at a loss, Mike, to wrap my mind around the intellect that said. I mean, I just played the clip before you came on of Texas Lieutenant Governor Paxton. Is it Paxton? Whatever. No, Dan mm-hmm. Patrick. Dan Patrick.
I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Saying there are more important things than living. And
are you kidding me?
No. And it's a steady stream of this shit.
Oh my God! There are more important things than living. Yeah, like what?
Well, I mean, as I noted, there's a missing word there. There are more important things than y'all living. You know, he wants to keep on living.
Right. Well, hell yes. Yeah. Well, I don't think people are going to rush into the streets and head for Lenox Mall here when I'm sure you remember Lenox Mall. I don't think people are going to run out and start jumping around with their arms in the air. By the same token, having been a close observer as I go to the public supermarket or the UPS drop off point or the drugstore, wherever we've been going. And we go masked up and gloved up, and we have the Clorox wipes in the car to wipe everything off as we go about that. What fascinates the hell out of me, and it kind of makes me sad, is to see all the people, black and white, walking around with no face mask on, no gloves on. And I just keep thinking, you know, why are you doing that? So those are going to be the people who will start going back to the malls and all this other happy horse shit. Because let's face it, you know this as well as I do, if not better, Bob. This is a consumerist society. We don't give a shit as long as we can get out there and buy stuff. You know, I won't buy stuff. I got this $1,200 check from the government. I'm going to buy stuff. Jesus God.
Guns, so, anyway. Mike. If somebody could do the ciphering on it and find out just how much of those $1,200 checks goes into buying guns, I think we might be more horrified than we already are. But
especially with our illustrious president encouraging the people in Virginia to go buy. So the goddamn Democrats down there are going to come after your guns again. Here they come. Jesus.
And nobody has lost one to this day. Well, I'm scared. I mean, it's scary here in West Virginia because we're not testing worth a shit. So we don't really know what's going around. And we're never going to know. But you've got a lot more population density in Georgia. You know, it's one of those things you can win win a beer in a bar on a trivia question. You know, what's the largest state east of the Mississippi in terms of square acreage? And people will go Pennsylvania,
right.
New
Georgia.
York. No, it's Georgia. It's a huge damn state,
Georgia, right.
With a lot of people in it.
It is, yeah.
But what's worse, it's a southern state, Mike. Y'all don't have the Medicaid expansion. What's gonna happen when Grady gets swamped? What's gonna happen? Grady Hospital or Emory, all of those around, because everything is vulnerable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. And if you look at The only model that we have for an out of control viral attack, which is New York City, if you look at that, it's pretty scary what is in store for big metro areas. Look at Detroit, look at Chicago now. And if it happens in Georgia, in a relative sense, the same as it's happened in these other big cities, then Atlanta is in for a hell of a next couple of weeks. I mean, seriously.
Well, I've been consulting this one website called covidactnow.org that it's featured. Uh-huh. I mean, they're so granular you can get down county to county. But just overall, Georgia, this is terrifying. With restrictions lifted, they predict in 3 months' time greater than 70% infection rate for the general population. They predict hospital overload on April the 30th. That's 9 days from now, with restrictions lifted, uh-huh. and they predict 105,000 deaths in 3 months' time. And I look at that, and I'm chilled.
Well, hell, that doesn't sound very positive, does it?
No, and we're back to the criminal moron aspect of Brian Kemp. How do you look at that and go, well, you know what? I mean, there's more important things than living. Goddamn, Mike.
I don't know. It just has me absolutely and completely flummoxed, Bob. I don't dare think these days. When I do my podcast, I just look at the available material and try to build a show around it. And I just try not to think, because if I stop to think, I'm going to panic. I'm going to freak out because, hold on a minute.
Sure.
Damn, I must have it. No, it's all this pollen shit. God, I hate this. But when I look around, especially given the statistics that you just quoted, yeah, I don't know what to think anymore. I can't. I have to stop thinking, because if I think, I'm going to lose my shit completely.
Well, at what point do the it's not just Brian Kemp, it's the rest of the godforsaken Republicans. At what point do they not just become homicidal maniacs? Because that's what I mean. This is that.
You put that in the future tense. I think a lot of these people that you're referring to already are, especially the white Southern Christians. They are just out of their minds. They're saying that their First Amendment rights are being infringed when an emergency executive order is issued that says people stay home. And I usually quote the Bible. I've told people before, right wingers, don't try to out Bible me, because I was brought up Baptist and Methodist. So, you know, that saying, I guess it was attributed to Jesus, where two or three are gathered together in my name, there is my church. And then I think about these mega church pastors who don't want to see the faithful not show up and put money in the collection plate on Sunday, so they keep their church open in defiance, not of the laws of God, but in which there aren't any, but in defiance of the laws of science and nature. And it's just insane to me. It's just crazy. So, you know, I attribute a lot of this, the spread of this disease, and it's not just Christians. Look at the Orthodox Jewish communities in New York City that have been devastated because they don't believe any of this shit. You know, they're just going to keep doing their prayers and studying Torah and dying. And I don't get it, Bob. I can't. As you know, and I know, a lot of people know, there's always been an anti-intellectual streak in this country that is waist deep. And that anti-intellectual streak tries to deny just basic science. I don't mean they're you have to be against the great thinkers. If you deny basic science, that if you're exposed to a virus, you're going to get sick. And if it's serious enough, you're going to die. I mean, how simple is that?
Well, it's apparently too simple for them to comprehend. Just like I can't imagine going out and protesting in Michigan because I can't mow my snow. I mean, those. Jim Jordan, that guy who turned a blind eye to rape, he was bemoaning on Twitter the fact that they can't go buy no tomato seeds in Michigan. Oh, the freedom and the humanity. And I'm thinking, well, hey, shithead, load up a semi with tomato seeds and get going, bub. And don't take any masks with you. Don't do that. Get up there and have a great freedom tomato seed giveaway. Yeah, for Jesus.
You know,
course.
If it weren't for, of course, if it weren't for all the good and decent people who are dying, the frontline responders, the doctors and nurses and medical technicians and all these people who are living the life of dedication to helping other people. If it weren't for them, I would just say, look, it's a culling of the herd. And if these stupid assholes want to get out here and do their mall trips and so on and so forth, or show up in church and you know, hold hands in communion and brotherhood and all this other horseshit, go ahead. Just go ahead and do it. And I'm just waiting for these governors, some of these governors, to say, okay, we tried. So now y'all just go ahead and do whatever the hell you want. Good luck. See you in hell.
it's hard to resist that. The governor of an aide to the governor of New Mexico referred to them and didn't say Republicans, didn't say anybody's name, but just said, you're behaving like a death cult. And right on cue, the Republicans, who weren't referred to by name or by party, immediately said, we demand an apology. Nuh-uh, we're not no death cult. God.
Right.
Yeah, it's breathtaking. So
I know it is.
I'll let you go here, but do you hold out any hope that, because I keep getting asked this question, that after this has passed, that somehow or another we will be better for having been through it?
We'll either be better or the whole society is going to collapse into chaos. So much is being revealed about the horribleness of predatory capitalism that we've all lived under in this country since the framers put it together based on genocide and slavery. And I think the truth is coming out. This disease is revealing, you know, when you have 40% of the population, Bob, that can't get together $400 in time of emergency, and you're supposed to be living in a place full of American exceptionalism, I call bullshit. And either we will change, we will adjust, we will come up with a more fair economic system, a more fair justice system, or it's all over. The experiment that the framers, as racist as they were, the experiment that they put together is over.
That could be, and everything hinges on what happens in November.
That's so true.
And of course, you know,
so true.
Nope, we're not going to vote by mail. We're going to have to go out there and rub around and smollock around on each other just to cast a vote. The story came out the other day that they have now identified 7 COVID cases in Wisconsin that are directly traceable to people having to go and vote. You're getting a bunch of email in here, but just a sample here. I got one in from Lady B. Mike, the OG of liberal talk show hosts. And to think the first time I heard you on that union owned station, i.e. America, right? I thought you were actually pretty radical. A brother friend of mine turned me on to your show, and I'd listen to you on the internet every night. Love you, Mike. You turned me on to Bob Kincaid, and together you two keep it real and make being an intellectual interesting, fun, and downright sexy. Sexy?
Lady, well, that was nice.
I can dream. Lady B says, stay healthy, Mike. Enjoy your life. Be safe. Wrap yourself in bubble wrap. Do whatever it takes. And, Bob, I'm so glad you guys are friends. The show's a great start to what will be an interesting rest of the program. So, well,
all right.
People are thrilled to pieces to hear from you.
Well, that's very encouraging, and we'll be here for the duration, Bob, just like you will.
Exactly, and when the tech gremlins start flying around the basement, just call, and we'll
I'll do it. I'll do it, Bill.
we'll beat those little bastards with a broom handle. Mike, you take care. Give our best to Kathy, and give our best to Molly, please.
I'll do it. Thanks a lot, Bob. Take care.
All right.
Stay healthy.
You too. Bye.
Bye-bye.
The one and only, and yes, as Lady B said, the OG of liberal talk, Mike Malloy. Brother Deacon Asa got a giggle out of, see, this sumbitch is crazy. Oh God, there's so much shit out there, and where I'm going to get to as much of it as I possibly can. But we had the Texas connection with Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick. Then there's the second most powerful man in the Senate of the United States, and that's John Cornholio. Now he's up for re-election. And if people could get behind M.J. Hager sufficiently, wouldn't it? And this goes back to me months ago saying, dare to dream of an America where people go to the polls and simultaneously reject and eject the worst thing ever to come out of Alabama, Mitch McConnell. And yeah, I will argue that Mitch McConnell is functionally worse than George Wallace was. Fight me. You know, it's okay. Because he has done so manifestly much more harm. But imagine an America where people go to the polls in Kentucky and reject and eject Addison Mitch McConnell, and where simultaneously they go to the polls in Texas and reject and eject John Cornholio. Because, you know, he's another one of those pro-life Republicans. And so today he tweeted, the data, COVID-19, the data showed that 9 of 10 patients had an underlying medical condition, including hypertension, 49.7%, diabetes, 28.3%, I'm surprised the asshole didn't call it the sugar, chronic lung disease, 34.6%, cardiovascular disease, 27.8%, and obesity, 48.3%. So you got the sugar and your high blood pressure, your lungs are all fucked up, your heart's a mess, and you're fat, you're dead. That's what John Cornholio said. Way to be sympathetic, John Cornholio. He could have sent a much shorter tweet and just said, sucks to be y'all. Monsters. Goddamn monsters. And is anybody monitoring the shit show? Has it started? Because as Ralphs pointed out, over on Twitter, Rick Wilson said the press briefing this afternoon is going to get ugly for the commander-in-chief. Might be worth watching. Note coming in from Cynthia. I want my Mike Malloy. Oh, yes, I want my Bob Kincaid, too. I hope you do that again. Two of my favorites together at once. It doesn't get any better than that. Thank you, Cynthia. Super friends. I don't know about Mike, but I don't look so great in the tights. I don't have the legs for it. Hey, thanks to Billable Rick for jumping in this evening. Thank you very kindly, Rick. Mighty kind of you indeed. Thank you, Cynthia. Thank you very kindly. I enjoy all my chats with Mike. He's one of my heroes. It's still okay to have heroes, no matter what I said about the ancient Greek origins of the word hero. But what Mike said about it, you know, it's not just the evangelical Christians that are nuts. Now, this story's about, 5 days old. But a guy by the name of Barry Colagero, who is a councilman in Lakewood Township, New Jersey. You may recall Lakewood is where they had to send in the cops to break up a funeral. And the people attending the funeral got obstreperous about it because they didn't want to be broken up because they'd rather get the Rona and die than not. Well, that's the Orthodox Jewish community. And bear in mind that Barry Colagero is the politically appointed executive director of some portion of the Trump regime, but he's also a city councilman for Lakewood Township in New Jersey. And it got so bad in Lakewood that Barry Colagero, before it became fashionable to despise this effort to keep people from dying of a repulsive virus, a Trumper, actually said, unfortunately, not everyone's following the law of the land. Unfortunately, there are groups of people who hide behind cultures and religious beliefs who put themselves, our first responders, and quite honestly, all of Jackson and all of the bordering towns at risk for their selfishness, irresponsibility, and inability to follow the law put in place by President Trump and Governor Murphy. How in God's name can civilized people disrespect their neighbors, the president, and the governor's orders? It is with a sad heart I implore Governor Murphy to set aside politics and use your power and authority to call out the National Guard to enforce the law and protect Ocean County from those who cannot seem to follow our laws. Now, that's not anti-Semitism. Just like it's not anti-Christian to suggest that Christians don't need to be packed in like sardines into their mega churches and then going out and making the rest of us sick. But there, I guess it's a fatalistic mindset? I don't know. But I do know it's a problem and becoming a worse one. Horribly worse. And that call out the National Guard part, it's very real. And at some point in time, if these aren't huge protests. This is talking about visual on the radio, but we'll get through it. You see the pictures of the maggot protests, the plague rats, and it looks like there's a multitude. But lo and behold, if you get an aerial view, there are very few of them. So send in the National Guard, Governor Whitmer. Send in the National Guard, Governor Northam. Send in the National Guard, Governor Beshear. Send in the National Guard, Governor Evers. And I can't remember who the governor of Minnesota is. But send them in. And make them go home. They care so little for whether anybody can breathe. Tear gas their asses. Won't hurt them. Oh, but God, they'll pogo stick right up under the cross then, wouldn't they? Yeah. Mercy. So if you've got something on your mind, a bee under your bonnet, whatever, burr under your saddle, jump in. We'll talk a little bit. Bob Kincaid, Horn on Skype. 844-843-4676, 844-THE-HORN. Tim Walz, thank you, Anatole. Tim Walz, Governor of Minnesota. Would you be aggrieved if governors sent in the National Guard to make them go home or go somewhere, since they so obviously are not willing to obey the law, should they be kept under guard? Because, see, science, and the virus in particular, doesn't give a good goddamn how many times they say it's fake or our response to it has been overblown. It's going to do what it's going to do, and what it's going to do is keep killing people. And the numbers over at COVID Act Now are truly terrifying. The greater Atlanta area, Fulton and DeKalb County, Georgia, now that Brian Kemp has lifted the restrictions and is lifting the restrictions, and by the way, lifting them even though Georgia cannot meet the so-called gateway requirements for phase one. They don't have it. They can't meet it. But there's more important things than living, I suppose. But with restrictions lifted, the hospitals in Fulton and DeKalb County, Georgia, are predicted to be overloaded on April the 30th, and the deaths in those two counties over 3 months' time, 7,000 people. Well, we lose more than that to the flu. No, we don't. Or then there was that repulsively ignorant asshole, Dr. Phil. Another gift given to us by Oprah. Thank you so much. You may have heard this. You may have heard about this by now. But holy shit. Dr. Phil, who is not a real psychologist or a psychiatrist, went on, of course, Fox News TV Radio Rwanda to talk to Frau Goebbels, Laura Ingraham, and declared there 250 people a year die from poverty. It probably meant 250,000. 45,000 people a year die from automobile accidents, 480,000 from cigarettes, 360,000 a year from swimming pools. That one was a particular howler. Swimming pool deaths in the United States are somewhere around 3,500 per year, not 360,000. We don't shut the country down for that, but yet we're doing it for this, and the fallout's going to last for years because people's lives are being destroyed. No, dumbass, they're not being destroyed. They're being saved. Death destroys lives. Monsters. They walk among us. And smoking, whatever you say about smoking, it's legal. So is automobile ownership. And those 45,000 deaths don't happen all at one time in one city. But that's going to wind up happening in numerous cities. Boy, I tell you what, they got some freedom down there in Georgia, because you can go and get a fucking tattoo. Hee-wee! And a massage, and get your hair and your nails did. And then when the Rona kicks in, you can go to the hospital, or maybe the morgue, with some of the best looking hair and nails of your entire artificially foreshortened life. It's not just Georgia. Alabama doesn't have near the population Georgia does. But when they lift restrictions, it's going to cost 47,000 Talibanian lives. How about Mississippi, Stan, where Taint Reeves is the governor. They lift restrictions. The hospitals will be overloaded on May the 5th. And 28,000 Mississippians will stop being Mississippians in the present tense sense of the word. And it goes on like that. Tennistan is going to be a deadly mess. Tennistan lifts restrictions. 65,000 dead Tennesseans in 3 months' time. And Texas, where the lieutenant governor says there's more important things than living. When Texas lifts restrictions, hospital overload day will be May the 9th. And in 3 months' time, there will be 275,000 fewer Texans. Now, how do you justify that? One of the first hot spots to catch fire will be Brazoria County. It's a small, not so terribly populated place, apparently. But they'll lose 4,000 people. Way out in the western panhandle of Texas, Loving County will likely be a bloody mess. If they lift restrictions in Bell County, Texas, that'll cost 3,000 lives. And South Dakota, where they never did a damn thing, they're looking at 7,000 to 8,000 dead. A lot of those will, of course, be poor folks, brown folks, indigenous people. I don't know how you sleep at night subjecting people to something like that. But Dr. Phil said, we got to open the economy back up. I don't know what the hell that's going to, I mean, what does that even look like? Oh, and by the way, since we were talking about Georgia earlier, their newest senator, Kelly Loeffler, you know, she's married to the chairman of the New York Stock Exchange. Well, she got caught selling off a shitload of stocks right after she got briefed. And before the market tanked. And it was really embarrassing for her because, hell, I think she's 23 points behind Doug Mouthful of Collards Collins in trying to keep her seat, last I checked. But she finally figured out a way to defend her massive profiteering on the coming crash. And if you criticize her for it, you know what that makes you? Well, we'll let her explain.
This is a political attack that is designed to distract from the issue at hand and to use this outbreak to play politics. We have addressed this and taken extraordinary measures to make sure that we can't be attacked for our success. This gets at the very heart of why I came to Washington, to defend free enterprise, to defend capitalism, and this is a socialist attack. We have taken extraordinary measures.
Yeah. Yeah, the only people that care that she let other people get slaughtered in the crash. If while she, you know, sold early and got out from under it. If you disapprove of that, that makes you're a socialist. That's what you are. You're a socialist. Well, I guess we give her bonus points for chutzpah, don't we? Damn. And there's no end to it. And it's not like they haven't been warned. Oh, hell no. FEMA and the CDC put together a joint report. The Washington Post got hold of it. And that report says that even if states reopen really, really very carefully, slowly, there will be what the report calls a significant risk of resurgence of the virus. That report goes on to say the only hope we've got against it is to have a massive system of testing and tracing. The draft of the report, according to the Washington Post, suggests hiring 670 people to help state and local departments quickly scale up contact tracing, tracking down people an infected patient interacted with so that they can self-quarantine and thus not further transmit the disease. But that's labor-intensive. And so it's probably more than 670 people could even do. And over the course of the last, 2 weeks, testing has plummeted by 30% or more. Even as infections continue to rise. So the whole idea of stay home and stay safe, it's what we have instead of God. Because at least you have the right to keep them out of your house, the plague rats and the maggots. Hell, people are even pissed off in Nebraska, where their maggot governor, Peter Ricketts, goddess of irony, never sleep. The state of Nebraska has a governor whose last name is a debilitating disease, Ricketts. But Nebraska's been hit, and even though it's one of the lesser infected states, people in Nebraska are pissed because Governor Disfiguring Disease Ricketts said reopening sit-down restaurants and bars may be a part of reopening by the end of the month. As we get into this toward the end of the month, we'll be reevaluating where we are with regard to where the virus is and making those decisions. And it's not playing well. Well, that's true. Brother Deacon Asa says, go easy on Dr. Phil, Bob. Nobody ever accused him of being the sharpest bulb in the picnic basket. That is a lovely mixed metaphor, I must say. Let me see here. Just curious. I haven't seen any posts saying that that Corona Caligula has lost his shit. So we'll just take a quick peep in. By God, I open it up, and there's that weird-ass woman from Onan, the network that spills its news upon the ground.
Now, see that number? I heard there was a poll. I'm sure there'll be a lot of polls. No, look, I think the American people want to make sure that they have jobs for the American people, not for people that come in many cases illegally into our country. So we're doing that. I don't know what the numbers are, but... I think just common sense tells you that's where we should be, and that's where the American people want to be. And we're going to build our country back. And I'm telling you, with all of the things that we're doing and infrastructure, which we desperately need, it's going to be an incredible thing taking place. I think it's going to be a renaissance. We're going to have something that will be a lot of people are going to go to work building those roads and bridges and tunnels and highways and all of the other things we're going to be building.
A lot of people are going to go to their graves.
And broadband for the Middle West. I mean, the farmers haven't been treated fairly. Let's face it, the farmers have been treated terribly when it comes to the internet. So we're going to take care of that. We're going to make them very happy. So we'll see you all tomorrow, and we'll have some interesting things to put out tonight. And I appreciate you being here, and it's an honor to have Brett Baer here. I've used his slot a lot, John. I've used that slot a lot.
Get on, Mr. President.
We want to have you back soon. Thank you very much. Thank you, everybody. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. There you see the President of the United States wrapping up his press briefing.
Well, that didn't take long. I wonder if Rick Wilson was wrong. Or did we just miss the losing his shit part? Ah. Okay, Jim Acosta went after him. He declared the stock market's not doing badly. It only plunged 600 points. Yeah. I mean, but then the market is not America. The market is wealthy people for the most part. Yeah, there's that story about the NRA's legal problems. They've cut $80 million out of their programs with Wayne the Peter saying that they're looking at a legal bill that has already cost them $100 million. And what he said is that the blue state attorneys general are investigating us, and that's like being in communist China. Mm-hmm. Keep suing them. And the problems aren't just here at home, here in America. Over the past 3 nights, in the northern suburbs of Paris, there have been altercations, confrontations between young people and French gendarmes. These are areas that are already subject to poverty blights. Villeneuve-la-Garenne started Saturday night after somebody on a motorcycle crashed into the open door of an unmarked police car while he was being chased. And that began a series of brawls and skirmishes. And the French have their own version of stop and frisk, where people of color are 11.5 times more likely to be checked by police than are white French people. People of Arabic origin are 7 times more likely to be stopped by the police. I keep remembering that great world crises are often fomented by things that initially seem small or insignificant. You can't get much smaller than a virus. But since we've had Texas Lieutenant Governor Dan Paxton, and since we've had Texas Senator John Cornholio, let's move east a little bit, where Senator John Cornpone Kennedy can't resist yakking into a microphone and doing his shtick. Now, the Republicans got practically everything they wanted in this latest so-called stimulus bill. But you know what? Democrats still suck. Naturally, this comes from Fox News TV Radio Rwanda.
I don't know how many thousands of businesses we have lost as a result of this week's delay. And it does make me angry, as you can tell. I think it was wildly irresponsible. I've tried to see it from their point of view, but frankly, I can't, because I can't get my head that far up my rear end. We got to stop the partisan political pageantry and start thinking about working together.
Right. He wants to work together. At the same time that he's excoriating them for having their heads up their rear ends. Funny, they were trying to save the post office. They were trying to make sure that municipalities of fewer than 500,000 population got help too. Yeah, we could solve all this rather easily by just doing what Canada did and making sure that everybody's going to get a check every month until we get this thing beat. And you know what? We're the United States of America. We can do that. The world was being overrun by fascism, east and west, until we joined the fight. Oh, the Soviets lost millions fighting the Nazis. But they had the devil's own time of it. things only changed when we entered the fight. We lost some, I think, 400,000 killed in the Second World War from the United States. Maybe I'm wrong. I looked that up on the fly the other day, and it sticks in my mind. The losses alone from things like Guadalcanal, Midway, Coral Sea would have had these would have had these maggots on their knees and begging for the United States to surrender. Because that's what they're doing here. They want to surrender to this plague. But they don't want to pay the price. They want someone else to pay it for them. Today in Raleigh, the plague rats came out to protest because North Carolina has a Democratic governor. And, of course, some maggot decided to get mouthy with a member of the local constabulary. Damnedest thing. Accusing the cop of being insufficiently patriotic because he wouldn't protest the shutdown. Little gnat sound from that event.
Are you doing that right now? Do you value your soul? How does it feel to be close to a Nazi? Hey, the Nuremberg trial, said that just following orders is not an excuse. Hey, the difference between a police officer that doesn't follow his oath and the guards at Dachau are minimal.
You got that? Now, he's screaming at this at a Raleigh motorcycle cop. How do we know that this is a pasty-faced, doughy white dude? Well, he's still alive. Because the cop didn't pistol whip him, didn't mace him, didn't shoot him, didn't billy club him. And somehow or another, him actually doing his job, which is mainly to just sit there and make sure that the maggots don't start flinging poo, although he's probably spraying virus particles even with every yawp that he makes. Hey, did you take an oath to the Constitution? You're just like Nazis. Ain't much difference between you and a guard at Dachau. Yeah, except for the goddamn death camps. Except for the fact that Bubba here is trying to spread death. Jesus. On and on and on. Can you imagine what would have happened if that person had been not nearly so pasty and not nearly so doughy? And yeah. Now, of course, given those numbers that Senator John Cornholio of Texas cited, this guy's at prime risk. If he gets it, he's in a bad way. Do you value your soul? Jesus. See, they're coming for us. And now, Attorney General Bill Pepe the Frog Barr is threatening the several states. He went on that radio program, Barr did, that's hosted by the guy who sounds like what happens when you start puking and can't stop. That would be Hewitt! And said that people's constitutional rights is being trampled upon. We have to give businesses more freedom to operate in a way that's reasonably safe to the extent that governors don't and impinge on either civil rights or on the national commerce. Our common market that we have here, then we'll have to address that. These are very, very burdensome impingements on liberty. And sit, liberty, sit. And we adopted them, we have to remember, for the limited purpose of slowing down the spread, that is bending the curve. We didn't adopt them as the comprehensive way of dealing with this disease. You can't just keep on feeding the patient chemotherapy and say, well, we're killing the cancer because we're getting to the point where we're killing the patient. And now is the time that we have to start looking ahead and adjusting to more targeted therapies. I mean, there's more than being alive. There's more important things than living. What's he going to do? Have Andrew Cuomo arrested? If he doesn't open the state up and let the virus burn even hotter in New York? But they're getting a little antsy, the maggots are. Maggot State Representative Robert Goforth of Kentucky was taken into custody this morning. The charge? Well, a woman showed up at the 911 center. The dispatch in Laurel County, Kentucky. And she said that good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual, Republican, maggot, representing Robert Goforth, attacked her because about unlocking her phone. In the news report, based on the police report, she had visible marks on her forehead, neck, and arms, as well as bruising on her leg. The victim told police that she had tried to flee from Goforth, and he tried several times to hogtie her. And he strangled her with an Ethernet cable to the point where she said she thought she was going to pass out. And along the way, he threatened to kill her. God is love, y'all. He's been charged with strangulation, assault, and terroristic threatening. I'm sure he'll be out on bond in no time at all. Aren't you? Sure. Bunch of emails rolling in. Yes, it is. Randy in PA asking, isn't South Dakota where all the good Christians charge you usury interest on your credit cards? It precisely is. Well, you know, that in Delaware. That's good, Randy. Hang on. Land of the Fritos, home of Ken Lay, still dead. Jeremy in Vermont says, yeah, put those protesters in Raleigh up against a platoon of Marines or Army boys and girls and these assholes that shit themselves. Well, probably so, because they are indeed full of shit. Why, Steve in New York asks, do I think I'm going to have to start arming myself? And adds, here's the deal that maggots don't get. Even when they start to slowly open New York, people will not magically start heading out as before. No, I think the smart money, even when they start opening up, is to stay the hell home. Keep staying home. If at all humanly possible. Well, aren't we lucky? Hung like Jesus says, I can't take Trump's voice at all. It's like a combination of cream corn and grits to my ear. Those are both corn products. Robert in Australia asking, whatever happened to All Lives Matter? Remember when the Republican response to Black Lives Matter was to say, all lives matter? Wonder what happened to that. Yes, I know, says Robert. It was all BS from the start. Of course it was. Their lives matter. And they think that they are going to be immune. For instance, from Minnesota. What are they protesting? Are they protesting people trying to save our own lives? Are they protesting against a virus that's 1/100th the diameter of a human hair? I'm kind of at a loss here, but via unicorn riot.
Woo! All in one fitness. That's what it is. Gyms are closed, and we don't want.
Hold on, let's get it all.
Take care of her own businesses.
She wants to go back to work. She's got a good crew that wants to come and work out, and she can't, so they can't. So all
are you
do you notice the music in the background? And there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA. That's the Lee Greenwood, only it's somebody covering it, but it's still terrible.
We're anti-Trump, just so you know who you're talking to.
All right, that's okay.
That's the anti-Trump news media right there. You guys actually do really good work. I don't agree with your views, but I will admit that you do good work. He's hardcore anti-Trump.
When it comes to the pandemic, are you scared at all? Do you believe in it?
Yes, I believe it's real. Exactly, yeah. It is real.
But we still have a right, I think, to work.
And we have a higher power that we believe in that takes care of us. And I know that it's a real thing. The pandemic is a real thing, and we do believe in that. But
fake,
we want to work. We want to work. We don't want a government handout. We want to go back to work. We want to feed ourselves. We don't want anybody else to feed.
The government doesn't have any money.
And there's a sign. Freedom is essential. Don't flatten the economy.
Yeah, we want to feed ourselves. That's why, yes, it is a real thing and people are dying. And it breaks our hearts to know the people that are dying. We believe that people are dying. Yes. My daughter goes to work at Abbott, so yes.
Are you mad that the shutdown ever happened?
No, I think the first shutdown was fine. Give it 2 weeks for people to prepare and then open back up.
Yeah.
But what? What, Kaylee? The first 2 weeks were okay, giving people a chance to prepare. Prepare for what? Going back to work and getting the goddamn virus?
And it's just getting ridiculous and ruining the economy.
Yeah, we need to get back to work. We need to have a wedding May 23rd. Yeah.
You're not going to be able to get married publicly now, huh?
No, we have to try and get our marriage license, but it's really hard right now because everything's shut down.
Okay.
But yeah, we're really hoping to get married May 23rd, so we're going to have it. May 23rd, we're going to do it.
Yeah, we want to do it. We want to.
There it is. They're upset because they can't, because she can't say yes to the dress. Son of a. mean and ignorant are a tough mixture. I don't remember, says Ron in Raleigh, when the corporate cronies of the Republicans were selling our jobs to the Chinese, I didn't hear any Republicans complaining. Now they're concerned about job losses? I hate these hypocritical bastards, Ron says. U.S. lost about 275,000 men in World War II. The Soviets lost upwards of 20 million. Yeah. I thought it was closer to 400,000, but yeah. We changed the game. Lee in New York, covering Lee Greenwood. It's a cover of his song, but they need a better cover. The sound still gets through.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Cynthia says, hey, those maggots are washed and covered in the blood of Jeebus. Don't you know? They're immune from everything, especially common sense and science. Fucking idiots. And they are that. What do you call a woman whose fiancé dies? Asks Steve in New York. A pre-widow? Oh, I wish my grandmother was still around. I could ask her. Because, as I said, that's how I'm here. Part of how I'm here. A random series of accidents and happenstances winds up with me in this chair on this day. Because my grandmother was affianced to marry another boy, and he got taken down by the 1919 flu. And then she decided to marry a different fella who went on to become my grandfather, as well as she became my grandmother. Mostly what I think what they called her mostly after he died was grief-stricken. David in South Carolina stands suggests Donald Trump will never need a proctologist's exam. He can just consult Pence and Barr because they keep their heads up there. Are a bloody lot. What we missed in the shit show. Sparky provides, at Tuesday's White House Coronavirus Task Force briefing, otherwise known as the shit show, President Donald Trump once again downplayed the risk of the anti-lockdown protests popping up around the country, suggesting that they're practicing responsible social distancing. CNN Chief White House Correspondent Jim Acosta promptly laid into the president, pointing out that most of the protesters are doing no such thing and accusing Trump of gaslighting the American people, which he is and has been doing for quite some time. Well, dadgummit, you have to stick around. I was coming to you on the phone there. Arnold says, fuck Trump. I love cream corn. I'm kind of fond of it, too, and I like grits. Having been lucky as a traveler in the South, I've had wonderful servings of grits. Trump can have no rights to either food. Fuck him. Adding as to the lovelorn in Minnesota, I guess they don't want a four-door car. There's plenty of ways to get married without no goddamn paper. I don't know. Do they have common law marriage in Minnesota? I don't know the answer to that, Arnold. But they won't go back to work. But not everybody is down with, say, the homicidal maniac Brian Kemp's decision to fling the doors wide in Georgia. The mayor of Athens in Clark County, Georgia, Kelly Gertz, said that, you know, you called for a stay-at-home order in your city. Anchor Brianna Keeler on CNN asked the mayor, you called for a stay-at-home order in your city even before the statewide order. You've been trying to give feedback to the governor. Has Governor Kemp's office given you any return feedback on what you're telling them? Well, let's see what Mayor Gertz has to say.
Yeah, certainly that safety is the big issue. That's something that's been key to you. You called for a stay-at-home order in your city even before the statewide order. I wonder, as you mentioned, you've been trying to give feedback to the governor. Has Governor Kemp's office given you any return feedback on what you're telling them?
I haven't had any advance notice of this order that was announced yesterday or any of the coming orders from that have been described for next week, potentially. But early on in this, we communicated several times, the governor and I, as I encouraged him to shut some of these high-contact businesses that are now being discussed as potentially opening.
So what do you do if you have the governor saying his guidance overrides local jurisdictions? What do you do to keep your residents safe?
Right now, I'm going directly to the public, and so I'm speaking to residents of Athens-Clark County. I'm speaking to business owners, and many of them are saying, just as I feel, we're not going to frequent businesses right now because we don't feel safe. We're not going to return to work. I've had a number of hair salon owners approach me over just the last day and say, we're not opening our doors back up because we care about our employees and we care about our clients.
The White House says...
Seems like a reasonable fellow, doesn't he? And that, but it raises an interesting issue. Does the governor of Georgia, or the president of the United States for that matter, have the right to tell the owner of a nail salon or a hair salon or a gym or, yes, a bowling alley? Because, you know, if you can't go bowling in Georgia, Georgia ain't got no freedom. That's just how that works. But can the governor of Georgia command a nail salon to open back up? Command a gym to open back up? I mean, what happened to that there free market? What happens if they don't want to get sick and die, and they don't want their customers to get sick and die? Can they just tell the governor to fuck right off? Well, north of Georgia lies the great state of Tennistan. North of Georgia, north of Alabama, north of Mississippi. And there were dozens, not hundreds, but dozens of these little AstroTurf freaks that showed up in Nashville to demand, I guess, that they be able to get their hair and nails done, whatever, go to the gym. You'll notice that the girl in the Minnesota video, her mama said, she's got a great crew and they want to come work out. She's a gym bunny. Well, WTVC, News Channel 9, Action Team Eyewitness Coverage. WTVC News Channel 9 got a photograph of one of the signs that one of the plague rats brought to the protest in Tennessee. The sign read, sacrifice the weak, reopen Tennessee. Now, I read something like that, and I see I see the potential there for some. What would you call that? Not espionage, but counter protest. But Tenistan is going to start reopening on May the 1st. But that's not fast enough for the maggots and plague rats. They want it right now! What do we want? The virus! When do we want it? Right now! God damn. Well, maybe it's not. WTVC News Channel 9 interviewed Greg and Zeta Sorrell of Manchester, Tennessee. And Zeta said, I'm brave enough to go to work, and I'm brave enough to be near my fellow humans, and I hate that we have to see each other as a disease now. Hubby Greg said, I appreciate the people who want to quarantine. And who can afford to do it, and who can make that sacrifice and do that, that's great. I appreciate it. I think you're free to do. I should be free to not do it. They interviewed Adrienne Hitch. She has a beauty parlor in Hendersonville, Tennessee. That's just a mite north of Nash Vegas. And she said she ain't got no unemployment. And the state ain't helped her with it. And the Small Business Administration money ran out, so she couldn't get a loan. Because Ruth's Chris Steakhouse got it. Hedge fund managers. So Adrienne Hitch said, we have no problem being shut down, but we can't afford to stay shut down if we don't have some kind of an income coming in. Now, see, that doesn't sound maggoty, does it? That's a solvable problem. But along comes State Representing Bruce Griffey. And he's a good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual, Republican maggot. And he done read a letter to Governor Lee in Tennessee. That letter's all about how we got to open this here economy right now. Representing Griffey said, I just don't think it's fair for the government to pick winners and losers on this unless you got a real good firm basis of why a specific business should not operate. Maggot! Is the coronavirus not specific enough? I mean, we can find it in blood tests and nasal swabs, and it's pretty specifically what it is. It's not a flu bug. It's not the amoeba that causes amoebic dysentery. It's not Ebola. It's very specific. Virus, representing Griffey. But there's a couple of words in there that jumped out because I've heard it in other of these plague rat protests too. Government's picking winners and losers. Remember the last time you heard that phrase? Last time I heard that phrase. It was Republicans carrying on about that one in our White House. Who's picking winners and losers? Solyndra, goddammit. Benghazi. No, you just got to say Benghazi. So when they showed up in Nash Vegas there, they were all on top of one another, just standing next to each other, a-breathing and smolicking and a-larping. Nobody was wearing a mask, so that meant, you know, again, just to reiterate, when I wear a mask, or in my case, a bandana, can't get any masks. When I cover my face in public, it's not because I'm afraid of you. It's because I respect you. And on the odd chance that I might be one of those asymptomatic carriers, I don't want to spray no virus particles on you. It is a sign of respect that you wear a mask. So for the most part, the dozens that showed up in Las Vegas, they didn't give a fuck about anybody but themselves. Because they weren't wearing masks. They had no respect for the people that they were there to protest with. Then again, many of them may think it's a liberal commie plot for Bill Gates to be able to get us all vaccinated and steal our precious bodily fluids. Because, you know, maggots. Wow. Just kind of goes on and on and on, doesn't it? Oh, and get the hockey puck. We had to have some humor this evening. So we had Texas Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick. There are more important things than living. You got a sign in Tennessee, sacrifice the weak, open Tennessee. You got maggots in Raleigh screaming Nazi at the police, who, for once, were not doing anything even remotely Nazi-like. John Cornyn telling America, it sucks to be you. And, of course, none of this would be complete without Judge Jeanine Weinbach Pirro.
Sheltered in their homes who've been patiently watching this unfold have seen the data and the facts change from day to day. First, there were 2.2 million who were supposed to die in the United States, and then it was 1 million, then it was 500,000, then 250,000. And supposedly, mitigation was already taken into account in those numbers. But the models, folks, are just plain wrong. And today, a potentially lower death rate. And we understand there are still many sick...
Hold the fuck right on. Did you hear the laugh? Did you hear that little chuckle try to sneak out? And even, ha, lower death rate. God, that woman has a voice made for print.
And we understand there are still many sick and dying, and density and hotspots are to be treated differently. But what about the rest of us? We want to go back to work, feed our families. And as the governors sit there and pontificate, we are the ones experiencing the reality that for every percentage...
Yeah, we. You and that mouse in your pocket, right, Jeanine? We. You're suffering. The millionaire is suffering.
Drop in employment. There are 5,000 to 10,000 deaths occurring. Depression, suicide, domestic violence, child abuse, resurgence of alcoholism.
Wonder why she mentioned that one.
Drug addiction, loss of hope. Battered women locked at home with their abusers. Abused children not being identified or protected because they cannot go to school. I'll wear my mask, my gloves, and I'll keep my distance, and I'll do the testing whether to determine if I have COVID or whether I have the antibody. But don't you even think about tracing or tracking or giving me a card. It ain't happening.
Then, you know, you can be welded into your home. No fan of China, me, or rather their government. But you know why they went around welding people into their homes and dragging people out of their homes? Because they wouldn't stay home. What do you do when people will not stay home in a pandemic? You have to have some means of enforcement. Another depraved heart. Another killer. Lee in New York wants to know, hey, Bob, how does Judge Jeanine stuff so much smug into her advocacy? Well, you can do that when you're on Fox. You can smugly declare that the aliens have landed and brought the vaccine with them, and nobody will say a goddamn word. Hopefully someday there will be a lawsuit for the shit she's talking. Jeremy says, Bob, stop telling us to get the hockey puck and what we should consider humor. I think the quarantine is beginning to take its toll on us. Borrowed from Steely Dan, this from Lady B. Maggot stupid fucks making fools of themselves. You know they don't give a fuck about anybody else. You know they don't. Amen. And Lady B reminds us, only 14% of Floridians will get unemployment. How the fuck do they expect the government to give them money when they worked so hard and voted for people that promised not to give the government any more money? I don't know what to think. I don't want to rag on people in red states. That's stupid. I have relatives in red states, but what the fuck do you think the government's for? It's for staying out of my liberty. That's what it's for. I got friends in red states, too. And that's not the ones I'm talking about when I do these little mockeries. The government takes care of the big things, or are supposed to, in times of crisis. If we don't support programs to help us out in case of a natural disaster, then we have little to no money to support us when things go south, so to speak. We have a corrupt government right now. They can't do the right thing, even if they tried. Trump is our punishment for thinking that we don't need a massive government to take care of 350 million people. We can do it all for ourselves. Fuck everybody else. Only 14% of Floridians who applied will get unemployment benefits. Florida, the three-coast state with gorgeous beaches and Miami nightlife, with hundreds of thousands of senior citizens. They make a lot in tourism revenue, and they can't take care of their own people. P.S. Please, y'all, stop it with the gun talk. If you own one, fine, but the only folks I know talking about buying guns and possible civil wars are unfailingly white. Is this what y'all want? Will everybody be involved in this, or is this just between white folks in red states and white folks in blue states? Don't start no mess. Won't be no mess. White folks with guns, please stop looking for fights. Ain't nobody looking to start another civil war but y'all. Well, I'll see your y'all and I'll raise you a them. There's a whole bunch of normal people in this country that just want to survive this. But the great great grandchildren of old grandpappy Zephaniah Thumbfuck, who marched off to defend the honor and decency of Southern womanhood. Well, they'd like to get it on. Remember, before this even started, the white supremacists and the maggots and the Nazis were running around talking about the coming boogaloo, which they expressly defined as a race war. Steve in New York says, my dad in Georgia, I don't give two shits about these people who have their death wish. However, When my dad calls me to ask if, given his age, if this means he can't leave his house until there's a vaccine, I get really pissed. And I realize I do have to care about them because their death wish will harm my family. These love-your-neighbor Christians don't care about any person beyond the end of their noses. Nobody else matters. Yeah. Jeremy, referring back to the two ladies in Minnesota, the two ladies washed in the blood, they made it sound as if they're, as in the two of them couldn't wed. Just saying, Pence wouldn't touch them with his wife's left hand in fear of catching the gay. No, I think she was a good heterosexual girl. That was her sister next to her or some such. But I can see where you might think that. Are we tired of winning yet? Asks Randy in PA. Oh, so much winning. So much winning. Let's run over and check in on the stress line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, you're always good at being able to name that person in two words or less.
Hi, Jude.
Hey, hi, Bob.
I'm so glad you called.
Well, thanks. Yeah, I've been listening to the program, and I just lit a candle for Ferg's journey to California.
Well, thank you. I'm still waiting to see how that plays out. He seems, you know, he's apparently got the job and committed to going, but I don't know how you go from here to there in the middle of a plague, Jude.
Yeah, but it's mostly that the inward journey.
True.
You know, it's just, yes. So, I mean, that was the intention of, but what I was, what I felt really drawn to call, even though this is not my forum at all, I just can't let the voice of that judge be the last female or feminine, well, she's not even feminine, but female voice to be heard by the Horn family. I mean, that...
Isn't she awful?
You know, oh, it just, it's beyond the pale. But it contrasts so much what, you know, what I and so many women do, you know, around the country, you know, with just standing. And I was thinking about the audio you played of the crowds and taking on the police officer and how you rarely, or I rarely, ever see any of those individuals alone by themselves unless they're waving a flag or something. But they always have to be in that, and this isn't anything astute on my part, but in this huge crowd. And it's like they have this free-floating, and it's not thoughts, but it's that free-floating mind, nothing connected with it. And then contrast that to women standing, that individuals, you know, because I remember when I was down on the border, one of the times, I think it was when I went with my daughter, the first, Agnes went out, and we did collectively that stand.
I remember.
So many others. Yes, yes. So that's kind of a counterbalance, and not, you know, not everyone understands that. I don't know if it's like too feminine or, but it's like the purest kind of form of being. And I thought maybe if it'd be all right, I'd share about specifically that journey to Clint, where the children were being detained.
Oh, certainly, certainly.
Oh, gosh. Well, you know, Renee and Darlene and Jim were added on to that scroll. I had taken them. Oh, it was about a 4-inch soft baby shoe, purple, and had a little ribbon on it. And I had it for years. And then when it came time to go down there, we thought about how can we do this collectively as women from all over the, you know, country. And so we ended up putting each person's name and then the date of it in the peace stand. Well, when we came down into Tornillo, which is an enormous port of entry, you come through an enormous section, Bob, acres and acres of pecan trees. And the energy down on the border is really powerful. But it's so strong, it has like a palpable kind of energy experience. And I, you know, it was vast. So you turn to the left, and all of a sudden, here's this huge complex. Now, Tornillo is also known as Tent City. And at the time that we were there, it wasn't quite, I don't know how many hundreds were there. The children supposedly had been moved. So we come down, and there's all this cement, and at the top there's a section that you go through, like screening booths, and then there's kind of a building. It you know, looks presentable and strong, kind of like a fortress, but it has, I don't know, there's just a certain palpable energy. So we came and went off to the right and just parked the car, being really unaware of how we would be viewed or, you know, not frightened at all. But, you know, it's you have to be extremely aware. And
there's a certain uncertainty to it.
Oh, yes, yeah. So anyway, we ended up standing in the direction of where the, you can't see the tents, but you can kind of have a sense when you move on, you know, you drive through the port. And we ended up holding, Carrie took a photo, and the baby shoe is just sitting on my palm of my hand. And then it goes across the complex, and in the back is where, you know, the children had been. So one of the things I'd like to ask, you know, if Darlene or, you know, or Renee or Jim or anyone would like to have, I'd love to share some of those photos. It really captured something. You know, we found different ports of entry, and some you can't cross, but there's these, I sent you and Agnes the photos of the gate.
Yes.
I think I sent it.
You did.
Just the magnitude, yes. And, you know, we had a border agent come over and opened up the gate and allowed us then to come on the other side so we could, you know, bring the intention of peace. But my second time when I went alone, I thought after I stopped at Clint, I went down and I knew that I had to drive down into the port of entry. So I went by the booth, and off to the left is the enormous complex where everyone's being detained. And as I'm driving down this long road, you know, there's cameras and you have to go over those steel devices that come out of the ground.
Yes.
And there was a gate, and I get down, and I'm right down there in right in the port itself, and there's this huge, like, 8-lane bridge, and on the other side, there must have been, like, 200 cars waiting to come back into the States, and off to the left is all the big, you know, complexes that you have to go through with Border Patrol. So I get down thinking I can do a peace stand and then come back out, and I had to park for a second and get my ground in to realize that I had to go over the bridge. So that's what I did. You know, Bob, I was telling Agnes, you know, because I had talked with her that day. You know, I didn't have a passport. I didn't have an enhanced driver's license. And when I came back, they had those signs stating that this is what, you know, you needed. So I don't know if that's too detailed. It comes from such a good, healthy, wonderful place, contrasting to where all these other individuals, you know, dangerous, dangerous people. And I just kind of wanted to bring that in and share kind of my perspective on something.
Well, I'm very glad you did. Update us, please, because you're in a hot spot. How are things up in Washington?
We're doing pretty well. We have, in my city, Tacoma, which is about 30 miles outside of Seattle, yesterday we had 36 that had died, and forgive me, I can't remember, it was like 200 and something of positives. Seattle was hit. It started having a slight, we went up, and then we started coming down really well and went up just a tiny bit. But, you know, Governor Inslee, you know, we have the Attorney
General.
Well,
you're fortunate to have an extremely competent governor.
Oh, my God, yeah. I mean, and Bob Ferguson, you know, our Attorney General, and I know they're all involved in all of this. You know, when you hear about shipments of things being taken back from, in fact, I was going to call Inslee, so you have to be real patient to call in there, but to find out if we had any of shipments, you know, that were detained or were stopped. I mean, that's kind of
terrifying, infuriating, astonishing. Except for this bunch?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, staggering. It's so surreal that, you know, if if I didn't have a certain way to stay healthy and remain who I want to be, you know, I'm just, well, you've been with me. I'm just kind of a quiet soul.
Yes.
You know, but I...
Not a rabble-rouser.
Not a rabble-rouser. No, I'm not. And I love dialogue. I love, you know, the interchange. Your silent periods, I hope it's not like you're tapping your fingers on the table. No, I'm kidding.
No. I'm listening.
Oh.
And I mute my mic when you're talking, so there's no noise coming through from me.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I appreciate, you know, hearing that.
Well, there's a little bit of electronic artifactual noise in the call, and I don't know where it's coming from. And I just want to make
sure.
Well,
I heard it. It's gone. I heard it for a while.
Well, I tried to EQ it out, but it's still there a little bit. Mm-hmm. But it hasn't detracted from the power of your message.
Oh. Well, it's, you know, important things, and, you know, we had that exchange of emails a while back, and I, you know, was wondering if what I was sending was too much, and, you know, and you explained, which, you know, Bob, we met like in 2006.
Yes.
Well, that's when we started connecting because of Mike, and, you know, we've, you know, met each other through the time. Sorry, something just fell off.
That's okay. No, as I explained, if I was to, it's a good thing I don't do video here because it's nerve wracking. It's like watching, I don't know. It's like watching a bad juggler spin plates.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And things just fall off the sticks, and I have to turn. Oh, let's see. That would be 90. I have to turn in excess of 90 degrees to see the monitor to know that the stream's still going out. Swing back around, check the chat room, check the email, watch the Skype screen. Keep an eye on the phones. It's an exercise in attention deficit disorder.
Well, what you offer, because I have never picked up anything ever that would be that kind of energy consuming that comes out of you while you're experiencing that. And I'm sorry you have to go through it, but you're a real consummate in terms of, besides the ability of how much you know about just so many different areas, literature and all of that, there's a real kindness and accessibility. And I had missed that for a long time because so much was going on in all of our, you know, in all of our worlds and everything. So it's just real precious and endearing to me. You know, it makes my day better.
That is so sweet, and it absolutely lifts my heart up, Jude. It does.
Oh. Well, I have two more things, if I may. I wanted
absolutely.
I think the essence of the Tarnillo Port of Entry coming back in, which had its own, you know, seriousness to it, because I was removed, and military was there, and I had to get out, and you know, and I ended up saying to there's three different kinds of border patrol. There's the custom and border, which is green, and then the custom and border police, which is black, and then. On our trip up to Canada, when we didn't illegally enter, but got stopped there again for 2 hours, their supervisory are gray. So it's been kind of an interesting experience to, you know, see so many. And I took myself off the track. There was something I wanted to. I know about going back in Tarnillo. When I had to be escorted into this huge complex to wait, because I didn't have the right kind of documentations. I got out of the car, and they were all looking at me, and, you know, they had these sunglasses on and everything, and I said, you know, first of all, I'm really sorry for having to, you know, have this happen. I kind of explained what was going on, and I said, I kind of think I'm caught in Murphy's Law, and one of the Border Patrol police, he started laughing, and he said, ma'am, he says, we've been watching you since you came. I probably look like some kind of, in a moment, there were so many incredible, just incredible movements that came, just in something that could have been scary or frustrating or you know, could have gotten in trouble. But my one quintessential thing is inside, I had to wait, and it was all glass. And, you know, after about 15 minutes, the agent came out, and he said, where were you born? And I told him, and okay. And then when he finally came back, he said, I'm sorry. He says, I'm by myself here. And we started walking out of the building, and I was on the left-hand side of him. And he goes, no. And I looked, and I said, what? And he says, no. He says, you walk over here. He says, men always walk to the left of a woman, which I thought, wow. But through the conversation across his complex, he was telling me about what he had been doing and how difficult it was. And he said part of it is when the coffins would return from Mexico, that what he had to do would be open the coffins and go through all of them.
Oh, God.
And he said, I don't mean to, you know, I can't remember the verbiage he used, but not shock, but like gross. It would not be a word I'd use, but it was appropriate. He said, you wouldn't believe how many didn't have heads and arms. And at that moment, I knew exactly how come women standing, you know, just for that moment right there. So when I came back and we said goodbye and I shook hands with him and thanked him, you know, I said, I really thank you for your time and your kindness. And I said, just do one thing for me. I said, make sure that you tell your mother and dad what a really fine man that they, you know, they made. And it was, you know, it was, and as much heartache, you know, which brings me to tears, with as much heartache that goes on, there's also another component. And I can be in two dimensions, but I'm much more effective if I find what really makes me strong and focused and, you know, and good, and be willing to also house, you know, to be down there, you know, where the babies were. So I hope that erases that judge completely off your program and minds and ears and hearts. Did I lose you?
No,
again?
You didn't. Ferg just wandered back here. Ferg just wandered back here, and I will send him your greetings. And
yes.
You know, you are so suffused with an essential what? Your most essential nature is one of decency and generosity of spirit. And I think that's and I think that's why you wind up with the responses that you get.
Well, those are pretty powerful traveling companions. So I will take that to heart, and I will bend to their wisdom. So it's gosh, well, we did it, Bob. We finally had a real live conversation.
And see, you're okay. You didn't faint.
No, I didn't faint.
You can do this. Anytime the spirit moves you.
Well, if anyone would like to connect and see anything, I am more than open to, you know, share.
Okay.
You know, their email addresses. I'd be real respectful with them. You know, I won't sell them or anything.
Okay. Well, if anybody wants to reach out, I will pass it along to you.
Wonderful. And gosh, thanks a million for the time. And you know, I love all of you.
We adore you, Jude. You take care, dear. And please stay home and stay safe.
Yes, that I am. That I am. All right. Be well.
Be well. Bye. Our dear friend Jude, calling from the great, the great Northwest. Jude is one of a kind. She is unlike anyone I have ever known, and I am privileged to know her. So it is time to wrap things up. Somehow or another, we managed to get through 3 hours of madness again. Had a note from Silent R. Lamar. Referring to Jeanine Pirro, said, please note, the judge is stupid. If she takes the test, her dumb ass is in the system. They will know where her stupid ass is. You're not going to make me carry some card. Oy. Yeah. So thank all of you for keeping this program on the air, making these conversations possible. Thank you to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program, so in whatever way you choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to the News Ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. And thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20-plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. The struggle continues. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Stay safe. Stay home. Wash your hands. Wipe down your groceries. Avoid anything wearing a red hat as though it were the plague, because it is. Later, y'all.